Hi, this is James Jones, and this is our special bonus rim session on investing. And I think you're really going to enjoy this. You're going to learn some things about investing today that I bet you did not know before, and you're going to feel more confident about where to put your money. All right, first, just real quickly, I'm going to run through these very quickly, a couple of housekeeping things. The members area with all the videos, including this video, which will be available within the next 2 days, will be right here at this site, and that's in any of the mind maps that you have. The password is RIM System. The live sessions, again, will be right here, and we have several more live sessions planned. Originally, I think I planned like 4 or 5 Q&A sessions, but we're just going to go, we'll have a Q&A session every month for as long as you want to. All right, so that's where you'll be able to access those. Any questions that you have, just enter them here. Our last session was a Q&A session, which was last Monday, a week ago from Monday. And so I don't have any more questions for today. I think we pretty much cleared up all the questions during that session. But if you have any questions, just be sure and go there and ask them. So we'll have something to talk about in the next session. All right, so let's get started with investing. I'm going to start with terms, vocabulary, and need-to-know terms. All right, first off, very simple, equities. You know what equities are. When you hear someone talk about equity, they're basically just talking about a stock. And a stock is just when you buy stock, buy a piece of a company. You go to the stock market or go through your broker and you buy part of that company through a stock. Normally, you buy 100 shares at a time, but there's nothing that says you have to. You can buy as little as one share. The official definition of equities is a stock or other security representing an ownership interest. And we're going to be talking about stocks today. So if I use the word equities, it's the same thing as stocks. Okay? All right, so here are the metrics that I'm going to be talking about, and these are the things that I look at when buying a stock. And number one is price to earnings ratio. Price to earnings ratio is the stock's price per share divided by its earnings per share. So this just gives you a really quick glance at how much the stock is worth based off of the earnings that it is reporting. And what I like to look at, and I've got a service I use that does this, that pulls all the historical data, I like for the price to earnings ratio, the current price to earnings ratio, to be less than the 10-year average. Okay, and I'll show you the service that I use to do that, because it's not easy to find the 10-year average. You can find the price to earnings, and I'll go to, let me go to Yahoo. Yahoo is a great place to get information about stocks. Yahoo Finance. Let me put this in the mind map, because this is a really good resource for getting all kinds of information about stocks. Okay, and I just looked up CVS, and right here I'll go through kind of what these are. There's the current price of CVS, and this is delayed by a few minutes, but it's not really that important. If you're not doing day trading, you don't really need to have real-time data. This does say 2:13 p.m. Eastern Time, NASDAQ real-time price, so I guess that is real-time now. The prior close, this was yesterday's close, $69.17. The open today was $68.71. And you can see the bid and the ask prices, which the bid price is what people who are wanting to buy the stock, that's the average price that they're offering. And the ask price is what the sellers are offering to sell for. So your price up here is going to be somewhere right around this. Your one-year target estimate, that's just Yahoo's estimate of the target price of the stock. You know, this is just forecasting, and I don't put any credence into this at all. The next earning date is February the 14th. The day range, that just means the range of this stock over this particular day. The beta is the volatility of the price. The lower this is, the lower the volatility. 52-week range, this is the range of the price over the last 52 weeks, so basically over the last year. The volume, this is the number of shares that have traded, so 3 million, over 3 million shares today, 3.4 million shares have traded hands today. The average volume, and that's 5 million. The market cap is 82, this is an interesting number here. This is $82.31 billion. The market cap is the total number of shares multiplied by the share price. So ever how many shares are outstanding, which you can figure out how many shares are outstanding if you take the market cap and divide by 6838. That'll give you approximately how many shares there are total for this stock. And there's the price-to-earnings ratio. That's 19.03. The earnings per share, which is also an important number, 3.59. All right, and the dividend yield, the dividend is $1.10, which represents 1.60% per year. All right, so that's what you'd make on the stock. So I like to buy stocks that have dividend, that return a little bit of money back to the investor. Let's go back to the definitions here again. So that's one thing I look at is price to earnings. Another thing I look at is PB ratio, and that is the price to book. So basically what that is the stock's price per share divided by the book value per share. All right, and the book value is just assets minus liabilities. And you can find that on Yahoo too. Just go down. It's not in the summary data, but it's in the key statistics. So if you get down here, there's a lot more information here. So you can see the price to book is, oh, it's right here. Price to book is right here. So 2.16. The next metric I look at is PS ratio, which is the stock price divided by the sales per share. So when I say sales per share, I mean literally the sales, whatever they're selling. If it's Apple computer, you know, they're selling computers and iPads and iPods and all that stuff. So it's the total dollar amount of sales that they have divided by the price per share. All right. And finally, there's the dividend yield. And dividend yield, like I mentioned just a minute ago, is, go back to the summary, it's how much this company is returning to the shareholders every year. So in this case, it's returning $1.10. All right, the dividend yield is important to look at because a company can't use some type of accounting scheme for very long to fake a dividend. So a solid dividend is often a sign of a great company. Okay, and like I said before, I like to compare these to the 10-year average. And those numbers are not easy to find. So I use a service, and I'm going to give you the spreadsheet here that's got all of these numbers already here for you for the stocks that meet this criteria. And I want to have at least two of those criteria met, and here are the stocks that meet those. And you have the symbol right here. So, and this chart comes from a service called Retirement Millionaire, and I highly, highly recommend that you subscribe to this. It's like $99 a year. I'm not making any affiliate commission off this. I don't even think they have an affiliate program. But it's a really great service where they provide you with all the numbers and update them every month. So in this case, here are the sticker symbols that I'm following. And these are the different companies. MDT is Medtronix. It's a, I believe it's a medical company. That's Walmart. I'm not sure. Can't remember what that one is. Aflac, Cisco Systems, BP, et cetera, et cetera. So here is the current PE. And this is current as of a couple of weeks ago, so it could have fluctuated since then. Here's the average. So we like to see for the current price to earnings to be less than the 10-year average. All right, so that's one metric. The second metric is the price to book value. And we like for the price to book value to be the current one to be less than the 10-year average. Okay, and the price to sales, we like for that to also be less than the 10-year average, because on those metrics, the lower the better. And then finally, the fourth metric is the 10-year average dividend yield versus the current dividend yield. And we like for this to be greater. So we want to earn more, obviously, than less. So in this case, the first three, lower is better. The last one, higher, is better. So you can see here, Medtronix is earning about 2%. And the 10-year average is 1.4. So their dividend has increased, which is a good thing. So over here in this column, we see the number of metrics that are known as undervalued. And undervalued just means that they're beating their 10-year average. So in this case, all four of these metrics for Medtronix is undervalued. Also Walmart, XOM, etc. And then over here, you have these have three metrics that are undervalued. And as you can see, the metrics that are undervalued here are, this is the same, that's lower, and that's higher. So this one is considered a three because the current PE ratio is the same as the 10-year average PE ratio. All right, so Microsoft is on this list too. Let's see what. That one's undervalued, that one's good, that one's, okay, right here you can see the 10-year price to sales is a tiny bit higher than the average. So that means that only three of those metrics are undervalued. All right, and et cetera, down here are the ones that have only two of them undervalued, which these are still good companies. This one, MCD, is McDonald's. The current PE ratio is slightly higher. The current price to book is quite a bit higher, but the last two metrics are in line. Okay, so those are the ones, these are the stocks that are on my watch list. These are the ones that I'm looking to buy. And I'm going to give you that spreadsheet too. So you don't have to subscribe to a Retirement Millionaire if you don't want to, but I highly recommend it. Okay, next term you need to know is an option. An option is a privilege that's sold by one party to another party that gives the buyer the right, but not the obligation, to buy or sell a stock at an agreed upon price within a certain period or a specific date. I know people get all confused about stock options. We're going to be talking about put and call options today because they're really, you can really use them for some cool strategies. So you really need to start learning how to use put and call options. So when you, here's the definitions for put option and call option here. A put option is an option contract giving the owner the right but not the obligation to sell a specific amount of underlying asset at a set price within a specified time. The underlying asset in our case is a stock. Okay, on the other hand, a call option is an agreement that gives an investor the right but not the obligation to buy a stock, bond, commodity, or other instrument at a specified price within a specified time period. Okay, so we're going to look at these things right now. I'm going to show you these using examples. Let's go back to Yahoo Finance, and we're looking at CVS. So let's just stay on CVS, and I'm going to show you the option contracts for CVS. All right, so as we know, right here is the current price. It's $68.35. So click on the left here, there's a link for options. So we're going to click on that. All right, and there's several different expiration dates for the options. Options expire. That's part of what an option is. It's a future price for a stock. So in this case, we're looking at the latest one, or the earliest ones we can look at are February, and the latest ones look like all the way January of 2016. But we're interested mostly in the ones that are expiring sooner rather than much later. The further out in the future you get, the much harder it is to kind of predict where the stock price is going to go. Okay, so looking at February 14th, the price of CVS right now is $68.34. If you look down here, let's see, look at the first one here. It says strike price is $47.50. Well, that's quite a bit lower than $68.34, right? This is basically saying that this call option is saying that the price will go down to $47.50. Or it's not saying that it will, but it's saying this is what will happen if it does. And so you could buy this call option, and it would cost you $20.90 per share. Now, the reason why it's costing you, I mean, it sounds like a whole lot of money to pay for a $68 stock, and it is. It's because you've already got the difference between these two is already a profit. So $68.35 minus $47.50 is $20.85. So there's already $20.85 of profit in this thing. So if you bought this call option, you would be positive $20.85 already. So you're basically paying a premium of 5 cents per share for this call option. Now, this call option, as you look right here, it says expires at close on Saturday, February 22nd. So that's approximately 1 month from today. So it's going to close or expire in 1 month. And during that time, between now and that, when it expires on February 22nd, this is going to move up and down. The price is going to decrease and it's going to increase. Or it could stay the same, but it could fluctuate. It will probably fluctuate, and it's going to fluctuate based off of the price, the current price. So if this price goes up, then the strike price here is going to go up. So if you bought it, I'm sorry, not the strike price, the price here on last is going to go up. So if you bought this at $20.90 and this goes up, then your price here is also going to go up, so you'll have a profit. Okay, so who's confused about that? Does anybody get that? I know it's a difficult concept to understand, but do you understand me so far? Yeah, Gary says confused. Mike says yes. So Mike, you got it or not? Okay, so let me go through another example and show you typically what, because this is sort of a absurd example. No one really is going to buy a $47.50 strike price when the price of this is $68. So let's look at something someone would typically do. At $68.36, someone might come down to this chart and say, hey, I think that CVS is a great stock. And I think that CVS is going to go up in the next month. I think that CVS might hit $70 within the next month. So that's only, you know, $2. How much is that? $68.35. That's less than $2. That's $1.65. All right, so that's realistic. That might happen. So they say, okay, instead of buying CVS, I'm just going to go buy the call option for CVS, the 70 call option. And so this person is saying, I think that within a month's time, CVS is going to be trading for $70 or greater. So they pay 68 cents. See this? This is the last price for this. They pay 68 cents per share for that option. Instead of paying $68.37 per share, they're only paying 68 cents. Now, what does that 68 cents give them? And typically when you're buying options, you're buying 100 shares at a time, and that's called one contract. Okay? So 100 shares, and if you try to buy less than 100, it's really, you don't want to do that because you're going to get charged the same commission off of it anyway. So typically you're going to buy 100 share contracts. So 100 shares at 68 cents. How much is that? That's $68. Okay, so for $68, you can control 100 shares of CVS stock for 1 month, okay? Now, what happens in a month's time if CVS stock either stays the same or goes down? What happens? And let's, who asked? Tiffany asked about the prior example, the $20.90. Let's forget that one. Let's do this one. This is much more realistic. I went through the example with the first one just to show you kind of an absurd example. Now we're going to look at something that is much more realistic. Okay, great, Tiffany. So, Carl, you're right. It's going to expire worthless. If that stock goes down in value or stays about the same, or even if it goes up just a little bit, like to $69 or even $69.99, it's going to expire worthless. And what happens to your options? They expire and you lose that $68. Yeah, you lose them. They're gone. You don't pay anything more for them. That was just an investment or a speculation, and you don't pay anything else, and you don't make any money. All right, so what happens if the stock goes up? What if it goes up to like $71? What will happen then? What if before the expiration date, the stock goes up to $71. What happens then? That's right, you make some money. The difference between your strike price and the current price would be $1. If you bought the 70 strike price and it goes up to 71, then you're going to make a dollar per share. You paid 68 cents for the options, so you're going to make the difference between 68 and a dollar, which is 32 cents per share. So 100 share, but you have to buy a 100 share contract. So at $71, you'll make $32. If it goes up to $2, it goes up to 72, then you make $2 per share, etc. Nina wants to know, who pays you? Well, generally when you buy an option, what you're doing is you're buying the right, okay, let's go back to the definition, a call option. You're buying the right to buy a stock at a specified price within a specified time period. So essentially, what you have is you have the right now, if the stock is $71, you have the right to buy it at $70. But generally in practice, what people do is instead of then turning that option, the 100 share or 100 contract, instead of turning that 100 share option into 100 actual shares of stock, people just sell the option. So just like you went into the marketplace and bought this strike price on this option, you can sell it as well. So there is a market for buying and selling options. So once it gets to 71 or gets to, once it gets to $70, then this option will have value and then you can sell it. If it gets to $71, it's going to have about the same amount of value as if you had the stock. Okay? So you're not actually having to buy the stock and then sell the stock. You're just selling the option. Makes it much simpler. Just make sure that you sell it before the expiration date, which is right here. Because once the expiration date hits, it's done. Okay? And then you can buy strike prices of any amount here. If the strike price is lower than the current price, then you have profit already built in. Or not profit, but you have that price differential built into it. Okay, a put option is exactly the opposite. And with a put option, you are betting that the price of the stock is going to go down. So let's look again at the current price of $68. Let's say you think CVS is going to go down, let's say to $67.50. All right? So $67.50, and this is, again, this is the February 22nd options. So at $67.50, you would pay $1.04 per share for the right to sell someone the stock for $67.50. So you're buying 100 shares, that's one contract, that would be $104 that you would buy this for. And here, in this case, you want the price of the stock to drop. So if the price drops below $67.50, then you'll make money because you get to sell your shares at $67.50, even though they've dropped below that. Okay, so let's look at the definition again. An agreement that gives an investor the right, but not the obligation, to buy a stock. What's the call? Sorry, wrong one. Put option. An option contract giving the owner the right, but not the obligation, to sell a specified amount of an underlying asset, i.e. stock, at a set price within a specified time. So once again, you're betting that the price is going to go down. If the price goes down lower than your strike price, then you make money. Because someone on the other end of this is agreeing to buy those shares at that price, $67.50. So if the stock drops to $65, you make $2.50 per share. How do you get approved for option trading? You'll need to contact your broker. Just tell them that you want the ability to buy options. And that's usually not a big thing for them, because there's no more risk with options than there are with stocks, unless you start selling the options. And then you have more risk. But just buying options, because if you look at the definitions again, when you're buying an option, whether it's a put option or a call option, you have the right but not the obligation. Okay, so at no time are you ever obligated to buy or sell stock. You have the right to but not the obligation. And what that basically means is if the market moves in your direction and you're going to make money, then that's when you execute your shares or your options. If it doesn't move in your direction, then you do nothing. You just let it expire. You're under no obligation whatsoever. So the only thing that you're out is whatever that option price you paid. If you paid 68 cents per share, as we did here in the call option, I think it was 68, whatever it was. No, I can't find it now. Yeah, there it is, 68 cents per share. Then you're out 68 cents per share, which is $68. All right, so there's not a huge risk in that. Same thing with the put options. It's not a huge risk. So just call up your broker and ask them to enable you for option trading. Now, there's another side of this too, which I'll go into a little bit later on, and that is when you actually sell a put option or you sell a call option. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So now, do you understand the concept of buying a call option, buying a put option? Who is still confused about that? Options are traded just like stocks, and you can go out to Yahoo Finance and pull up the chart. Let me show you again where it's at. Just type in, go to Yahoo Finance, type in whatever symbol it is. MSFT is Microsoft. Okay, so Microsoft's trading at 35.85. Right here, under left-hand side, click on options. And here we see the option chart for Microsoft. In this case, we have the first one is January. So January 2014. So these will expire next week. Different stocks will have different options and different strike prices, different expiration dates. Usually the ones that are traded more have more dates. So if you wanted to go out, say, to March, say you want to look out 2 months, just click right here to go to the March options, and then you can buy them. And the symbol is coded with the strike price. Well, first off, it's coded with the stock symbol, in this case, MSFT. And then it's coded with the expiration, which on this one it's 14, meaning 2014-03-22. So that's the expiration date. And then the next symbol is a C, and C stands for call. So it's either a C or a P, so call or put. And then the rest of it is the strike price. So in this case, strike price is 27. Down here you see the strike price is 44. Okay? If you look down here, these are all the puts, and they're going to have in the middle, they're going to have a P. So that's how you identify. So when you buy one of these, you simply give your stockbroker this symbol right here, MS, or you tell him, you don't have to give him this whole thing. You say, I want to buy a Microsoft March 22nd, 24. Okay? Or you can just give them this whole thing right here. And they'll read it back to you, confirm exactly what you want. All right? So let's say Microsoft is 35.86, 35, it just changed, 35.85. So let's say that we think Microsoft is going to go to, let's just say by March 14th, we think Microsoft is going to be trading at $37. Well, that's $1.13 from what it is right now. And that's 2 months now because we're looking at March. So that would be 89 cents per share. So for 100 share, which is one contract, we're going to pay $89. And that allows us to control 100 shares of Microsoft stock. So we're controlling 100 shares of Microsoft stock for only $89, which is pretty cool, right? I mean, your risk is that you lose the whole $89, but you've got 2 months before the option expires. So you got 2 months for Microsoft to hit 37 and then increase from there. And I'll tell you in a little bit, I'll tell you the stocks that are the best ones to use an option, or the ones that I think are the best ones to use an option strategy on. That's in the strategy session, or the strategy section today. Okay, so there's your puts and calls, and that's buying puts and calls. And we'll talk about selling a little later on. All right, the next thing I want to throw it your way is completely different. It's called a fixed income asset. A fixed income asset is an asset that provides the owner with a fixed stream of income. The one that you probably have heard a lot about and you know about already are bonds. Bonds are very common example of fixed income assets. So you buy a treasury bill, and it gives you a certain percentage of interest on a certain basis. Municipal bonds, the same way. Municipal bonds return certain percentage to you. So I like municipal bonds for a couple of reasons, and I'm going to show you which are the best municipal bonds to buy. One thing about the municipal bonds that's great is that they're tax-free. You don't pay any tax on municipal bonds. And that's just because the government wants you investing in your local government. All right, so those are really the terms that we're going to talk about today. And now let's get into some tactics and strategies. Okay. First off, how to buy stocks at a discount. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go into this because I was just talking about options, and this is a great place to do it. All right, now you probably know about discount brokers, and you can buy stock. You know, you buy stocks through a discount broker, and the discount simply means that you get a discount on the commission. So I remember back when I first started buying stocks back 25, 30 years ago, you're paying a substantial amount in commissions. Like I would pay around $30, $35 to buy 100 shares. So I don't mean that's what the shares cost. I mean that was the commission. So if I bought, if Microsoft was trading at $35, then I would pay $35 for the stock and then another $35 to buy 100 shares. So if you trade a lot of stock, that's a lot of money. Well, then discount brokers started coming along, especially when the internet started kicking up. And now you can buy shares with a commission of a penny in some cases. I use a company called TradeStation, and I do a lot of trading. So that's geared toward high volume. And so I pay one penny per share for stocks and options. So if I do a 100 share option trade, it costs me $1 in commissions. If I buy 100 share of Microsoft, it costs me $1 in commissions. But another one that you can use is TradeStation. TradeStation will charge you about $5 per trade, which is still pretty good. But when you're buying stocks at a discount, what I mean is you're actually getting a discount price on the stock itself. So let's go back to Yahoo, and let's just stay with Microsoft. Okay, so right now Microsoft's trading at $35.80. And let's say Microsoft is on my watch list here. Microsoft is one of the stocks that is considered, according to my chart here, a really good value. And so if Microsoft is a good value right now at $35.79, it would be an even better value if the price were lower, right? I mean, that's pretty logical. If it's a good value right now, it would be a great value at a lower price. So let's see what kind of options we can get for a lower strike price. So I'm going to go to my options, and I'm going to look at the put options. Okay, and it was what, 35.79, 35.80. So let's say, and I'm looking at, I'm on January, I want to go to about 60 days out. Let's go to March. Okay, so if $35 is a great price, then $33 would be a really good price. $34 would also be a great price. So let's say that I'm willing to buy Microsoft if it hits $34 a share. Okay, because at current prices, it's a great buy. If it drops a little bit more, it's going to be a fantastic buy. So I'm willing to buy Microsoft at $34 a share. So I can actually get paid for my willingness to buy Microsoft at $34. Let me say that again. I can get paid just because I'm willing to buy Microsoft at $34. And I can get paid 76 cents per share. That's the price right here. So before we talked about buying options, buying put options, buying call options. In this case, instead of buying an option, I'm going to sell an option. And who buys that option on the other side? It's the person who we were just talking about a minute ago. It was us a minute ago when we were buying these. Now we're selling them. And so you're selling them to someone, you're selling this to someone who is willing to buy this strike price. It's someone who thinks that Microsoft is going to go down within the next couple of months. On the other hand, we're saying if it goes down, that's great. It's a great buy for us. And so here's how this works. You call up your broker, or I do it online, and I say, I want to sell a 34 strike price Microsoft for March the 22nd. Your account is then credited with 76 cents per share. So for 100 shares, you're going to make 76 bucks. So now you're making money just for your willingness to buy it. If the stock goes up, then you keep the $76 or the 76 cents per share, and you don't have to buy any stock. If the price goes down and hits your strike price, then you are obligated to buy that stock at that price. So let's say the stock falls to 34 and it falls all the way down to 33. Well, you agreed to buy it at 34, so you have to buy it at 34. But we already said at 34, it's a fantastic deal. So you do this with stock that you feel is already a great, great deal. And then you make a little bit of money. Now, I said you're buying the stock at a discount. That's true, because let's say that your strike price is hit, and or let's say it goes down to 33. Well, you're going to have to buy the stock at $34 because that's what you agreed to do when you sold this option. So at $34 and 100 share, you're going to spend $3,400 for this stock. But you got paid $76. So $3,400 minus 76, that's $3,324 divided by 100. You just paid $33.24 instead of $34. Instead of $34, you paid $33.24. So you got it at a discount because you earned $76 or 76 cents per share. Okay, does that make sense? This is just the opposite end of buying. The only downside to this is that you are obligated to purchase the stock at the strike price. So whereas the buyer of the option has a right but not an obligation, you have an obligation if you sell it. So you're selling these. This is sort of like selling an insurance policy. You're like an insurance company, and you're selling stock options are like the insurance policies. You're taking a little bit of money, which you're bringing in, which you're getting for the premium, because you're willing to buy the stock at this particular price. Okay, so that's how you buy stocks at a discount, is by making income from selling the option to someone else. And to sell it, it's the same thing as buying. You just call up your broker, and you have to be approved for selling options. So that's a different approval level. You'll have to ask your stockbroker about their policies and procedures for getting approved. Normally, it's not going to be a big deal to get approved for selling put options. Now, the other side of that is selling call options, and you don't want to do that because you could have unlimited liability selling call options, and your broker will not let you do it anyway. You have to have really special authority to do that. Now, the only exception is if you own the underlying stock. So if you own 100 shares of Microsoft, then you could sell the call option for a particular strike price. I don't like doing it because if that happens, then I don't lose the stock, but the stock, my stock gets sold out from under me at whatever the strike price is. But selling put options, great strategy. What are the highlighted options? So when you say highlighted, do you mean the ones like right here? That's sort of, that's a green with an up sign? No, the rose. Oh, I see. I could barely make out what these are. That just means that they're in the money. When I said they already had the profit built in, there's already profit in these. It's known as an in the money option. All right, the best investment vehicle today is a diversified portfolio. You want to have diversification. You don't want to have, you know, it's like putting all your eggs in one basket. You don't want to do that. You want to have several different baskets. And I'm going to show you typical allocations. This is very close to what I have in my portfolio right now. I have 30% in equities, which are, again, are stocks. I have 30% in fixed income assets. And I'll show you what those are in just a minute. So for equities, this is what I have right here. I don't have all these stock yet, but I'm buying them from this list right here. Fixed income assets. I buy closed-end municipal bonds. You might hear these referred to as munis. A muni is just a municipal bond, and there are closed-end bonds and there are open-end bonds. I only buy closed-end bonds, and I've got the three right here that Retirement Millionaire recommends. It's NEA, IIM, and NUV. And what's the difference between closed-end and open-end? A closed-end bond is traded just like a stock. There is a set number of shares. With an open-end, there is an infinite number of shares. When someone puts money into the bond or buys the bond, it creates more shares. That's open-end. I don't like those. I like the closed-end. Closed-end simply means that there's a limited number of shares available, and they're traded just like any other stock will be traded. These in particular are currently at a discount. They're trading at a discount, and you can actually, there's a site you can go to, I've got it in the resources, to see what I mean by trading at a discount. What that means is that the share price of those closed-end bonds is less than the value of the bonds themselves. Okay, so when you buy these closed-end bonds, you're not just buying one bond. That wouldn't be good because, like, if you had Detroit last year, then it defaulted. You would be out all your money. What the closed-end bonds do is they buy a basket of bonds, bonds from all kinds of different municipalities, because even if one of those defaults, it's not going to hurt you that much, and the default rate is extremely small. So as long as you're diversified within your municipal bonds, you're good. That's what these three municipal bond funds do. They diversify your bond holdings. So we have NEA, IIM, and NUV. All right, so let's go to the site, which I have in resources. It's CEF Connect. I have no idea what CEF stands for. It's closed-end funds, I guess. Yeah, closed-end funds. All right, so now you can type in a ticker symbol, which NEA is an easy one to remember. And then you can get the basic information about the particular bond. Now, the important thing here to look at is what's called NAV. And that stands for net asset value. And if the NAV is higher than the current share price, in this case, the share price is $12.86, the NAV is $13.87, then this is trading at a discount. So when you buy this, you're actually buying it at a discount to the underlying bond prices. So all the bonds in this group added together are worth more than the actual share price. So that's buying it at a discount, which is awesome. So in these three that we're looking at here, all three of these are trading at a discount. So when you buy them, you're getting them at less than face value. And these, I'm not sure if you can look these up on Yahoo or not, but I included a link here to this CEF Connect. Let's go see. And you would buy these just like you're buying. Yeah, they are here. You would buy these just like you're buying a stock. Just, you know, call up your broker or access your broker account online and enter that symbol, and that's how you buy it. But use this CEF Connect if you want to see what the premium discount is. I don't think they're going to show it on Yahoo. It might be under the, no, they don't even have key statistics for these. Okay, so I have 30% in stocks, 30% in fixed income assets, and my fixed income assets are the closed-end municipal bonds, 30% in cash. And let me say a little bit about this. I am a firm believer that you should start, if you're just starting out investing, you need to start with cash. You need to build up your cash reserves first, and you need to have at least 6 months' worth of living expenses. That's what you should concentrate on right now if you're just getting started out. Okay? So start with cash. And then don't worry about these other things until you have at least 6 months worth of living expenses. All right, the next thing I have is what I call a chaos fund. Chaos fund is just if the markets go all to hell and riding in the streets. Just in case, 5%. The chaos fund is made up of gold and silver. So I buy, and I like silver because silver is just easier to buy, and there's not a huge investment. You don't have to buy, if you buy a gold coin, it's going to cost you, a 1 ounce gold coin is going to cost you like $1,300. That's a lot of money for one little gold coin. You can buy what they call junk silver, and junk silver is silver coins that were produced in the U.S. before 1965, and those are, let me put them down here, silver coins before 1965, and those are quarters, dimes, half dollars. Any quarters, dimes, and half dollars that have a mint date before 1965, so 1965 or before, are 90% silver. And there is a great site here. I need to put this in the resources too. There's a great site here called Coinflation. That will tell you the value of your coins. coin calculators called the silver. There it is. This tells you the value of the silver in your coins. You just enter the type of coin it is and the number of the quantity you have. So let me put this in the resources. Okay, so in this case, let's say it's a Washington quarter, 1964. So let's say that you have 100 of these. And right here is the current silver price. And the silver price, they get this from the market. So it's this is accurate. So you don't have to enter this. You can change it if you want, but I just leave it the way it is. But it's accurate. Then click submit. And here we go. At $20.04, the total value of your silver coins are $362.42. And this bottle over here is driving me crazy, going up and down. And it tells you a little bit of statistics about this, how many troy ounces of silver and 100 silver Washington coins. Each Washington quarter contains 0.1808 troy ounces of silver and is valued at $3.62. So a quarter of 1964 or before quarter is worth $3.62. And so if you have any silver quarters that you don't know about, maybe you have a bunch of change or coins that you've been saving for a long time, you might want to go through them and look at the dates. And if they're before 1964 or before 1965, then they're worth a lot more than face value. I actually found, I was at Dunkin' Donuts not too long ago, and in my change I got a dime back, and it looked, the dime looked different. I didn't notice the date, it just looked different. So I then looked at the date, and it was like 1960. So it was worth, let's see how much a dime is worth. Roosevelt dime, let's just say one, so $1.45. So a 10-cent dime is worth $1.45. So check your coinage if you've got, especially if you've got coinage that you've been saving for a long time. You could potentially have some that's silver. All right, so where do you buy? If you want to get some junk silver, where do you buy it? I go on Craigslist, and I just go on Craigslist and place an ad. I've done this a couple of different times. I buy silver, and I just list the types of silver coins I'm looking for, dimes, quarters, half dollars, and I also will buy, just go here and look, I put in the list Mercury dime, because it's the same thing. Mercury dime has the same silver as a Roosevelt dime, Barber dime, I'll just put the list that's right here, and then whatever you get, you can figure out how much silver is in it. I even bought some Morgan dollars. Morgan dollars don't have as much silver percentage-wise, but they're really heavy and they're big, so they've got, weight-wise, they have a lot of silver. One thing about placing ads on Craigslist or stuff like this, be sure and when you meet the person, what I like to do is meet at my bank, and I have a safe deposit box there, but if you don't, you can just ask your bank if they have a private room you can go into. Most of them have a private room where you can go and do your transaction. That way you're not meeting someone out in a, you know, someplace. Can you sell it back to the bank? No, you can't sell the silver to the bank, but if you have silver, it's very easy to sell. I have silver. I don't want to sell it. I'm using it just as, you know, my 5% chaos hedge. But if you want to sell it, you can go on, you can do the exact opposite of what I just told you about. Go on Craigslist and say, I have silver to sell. And usually, if you're selling it, you can get a little bit of a premium above what the silver price is. Another place you can sell it is eBay. You know, with eBay, you're going to have, you're going to have to pay eBay whatever their fee is. So I find the best place is Craigslist. And if you're selling it, be sure to get one of those pins that has the counterfeit protection thing on it. You can get them at any office supply store. So if someone gives you $100 bills, just use that pin to make sure the $100 bills aren't counterfeit or the $20 bill or whatever. Okay, and my final part of my portfolio is what I call my speculation fund. This is just my fun gambling fund. If I see something, stock that I think is going to go up, or someone says, hey, you know what, Bitcoin is the new thing now, then I can buy up to 5%. I can put up to 5% of my portfolio into speculative stuff like that. And you might not want to have a speculation fund. If you don't have one, then you might want to just increase one of these, increase your cash to 35%, whatever. But this is just for me. This is like makes my trading fun. It allows me to buy stuff that's sort of a gamble. All right, so how to protect your investments. Three things that I do. And first off is my diversified portfolio. So I'm diversified between stocks, fixed assets, and cash. And then, of course, I have my chaos fund, my speculation fund. But then also, I only buy high reward, low risk assets. So those are closed-end municipal bonds, which I told you about, and my high-performing stocks, which are on my spreadsheet right here. These are the ones that all return dividends, and they have at least two out of three of the metrics to show that they're undervalued. I always use a trailing stop loss. This is a very important concept to know. This will keep you from losing your butt in the stock market. I use 10% on pretty much everything. And here's what that means. Let's say you buy, let me go back to the spreadsheet so I can just open this up. Let's say you buy a stock for, let's say, $25 per share. And you buy 100 shares. I'm going to increase the size of this so you can see it. Sorry about that. Just stock A, whatever it is, say Microsoft or whatever. It's $25, you buy 100 shares. So 25 times 100 is $2,500. That's your investment in the stock. A 10% stop loss, trailing stop loss, simply means that if this share price, this is the price, let me put some formatting on here so you can see it better. Okay. Okay, 10% trailing loss simply means that if this stock loses 10% of its value from $25, I'm going to sell it, and I'm going to cut my losses at 10%. So what's 10% of 25? Not 10%. What's 25 minus 10%? Just multiply by 0.9. So a 10% loss would mean that the stock drops to $22.50, okay? And I've got that same 100 share, and so I'm going to sell it, and I'm going to get $22.50. So my loss is going to be $250. Okay, so that's all I'm losing is $250. If the stock goes down below $2,250. I'm out of it at $2,250. Now, let's say that the stock goes up. Let's say it goes up to $26. Let's say the day after I bought it, it goes to $26. Okay? Well, in that case, we're going to calculate a new stop loss based off the $26. So now, instead of selling it at $22.50, when it hits $22.50, we're going to sell it when it hits $23.40. And we still paid $25 for it. Okay, so now our loss is only $160. So if the stock goes up above what you bought it at, you recalculate your stop loss, because then something really great starts to happen. Let's say this stock gets to $30 a share. I think that'll work. You bought it at 25, it gets to 30. Now what is 30 minus 10% or 5%? I'm sorry, 10%. $27. So now you're going to sell this stock when it hits $27. You got 100 shares. And let's do the math here. You paid $25 per share, so you paid $2,500. You're going to sell it at $27. So now, instead of a loss, you've got a gain. So what the 10% trailing stop loss does is, it limits your risk to 10% of whatever your buying price was, but it preserves your profit. So once you get into the profit range, so right around $27 is going to be your profit range. Once you hit $27 with this, then everything above that is going to be profit. And if you have this 10% trailing stop loss in place, you will never lose more than you will always preserve your profit if the stock price hits 27 or greater. Okay? The way that you set the 10% trailing stop is within whatever trading platform you're using. Some of them have it to where it automatically, you can automatically set it. And what it does is it recalculates your stop loss every day. If you don't happen to have that, you can use a spreadsheet to do it. And I've got a spreadsheet that I will give you. I don't have it on this computer, but I've got a spreadsheet that I will give you that pulls in the stock prices from the internet. Let me show you how that works too. I hadn't thought about showing you that, but let me show you how that works. No, I can't show you with this computer because I have the starter edition of Excel on here. So I'll have to do it from my other computer. What I'll do is I'll do a video showing you how to do that, and I'll include the spreadsheet with it. So basically all you do is you put the stocks that you own in, and you put whatever your trailing stop loss is going to be, and then it calculates it every day, and it tells you if you should sell that stock or not. Sorry, I'm reading a question right now. Okay, I've been getting emails to register for free binary option software that promises you explosive income of six figures and only need to pay $997 per month for the software. It's a scam. It's a complete scam. There's tons of those that that come out. So yeah, don't fall for those things. Yeah, they say, and John says that they say that they donate 10% to charity. Yeah. Or they want you to donate 10% to charity, whatever. Those are all scams. What I'm showing you here is just very, very basic stuff that if you follow this, then you can't go wrong. Now, this nothing here is promising you explosive profits, but this is a way to just slowly grow your profits and make 10, 12, I did 18%, I think, over the last 8 months of last year. I'm saying the last 8 months because that's when I started using TradeStation to monitor everything. Before, I was using a broker to manage all my stocks, and he just wasn't doing very much. When the market was doing good or doing very good, he was just doing okay. And when the market was doing bad, he was doing worse than bad. So I finally just fired him and started managing stuff myself. I took a stock trading class, a week-long stock trading class about a year and a half ago. It cost me $10,000. And part of what they taught is what I'm teaching you here. Okay, how to play stock market with very little money. Well, I talked about that earlier about doing options. But let me tell you what, if you want to play the stock market and you don't have a lot of money, you want to use options, what do you buy? One of the things, and nothing is surefire, nothing's going to work all the time, but one of the things that tends to be true is when a stock goes up, it tends to continue going up. When a stock goes down, it tends to continue going down. And so what we look for are stocks that have hit a new all-time high. So you can actually go to Google and type in stock at a new high today. Search for that, and you see which stocks are hitting new all-time highs. So right here is one. This is actually 2 days ago, but it was CRM. It hit an all-time high. I don't mean a 52-week high. I mean all-time high. So let's go to Yahoo and look at this stock. CRM. And that stock is Salesforce.com. And it hit a 52-week high. No, I'm sorry, a lifetime high of should have it right here. Well, it was $61.45. That was its all-time high. And today it's down some, it's down to $59.71. But what you can do is you can go to the options. And let's say let's go out to, this is January, so I'm going to go out to February. So a stock that has hit an all-time high tends to continue to go up. With that rule, then we can go out and say, okay, let's go out to, $63. So we could pay 48 cents per share for a 63 strike price for that stock. And that would cost us $48. So we can sort of, it's sort of a gamble. Yeah, it's a gamble, but you're gambling $48 in order to capture some of the gains off of a high-flying stock, a stock that's already shown that it has broken out of its prior price range. Have I tried drip plans? No, I haven't. Haven't tried those. I tend to stay pretty simple. Pretty simple, pretty safe. Closed in municipal bonds and high performing stocks, like is on the spreadsheet. And you'll get a copy of the spreadsheet. All right, let me go over the resources that I have here. First off, Retirement Millionaire. I think this is $99 a year. It is worth every penny. I have gotten some really good, great recommendations from this. Really great. Discount brokers. I use TradeStation, and like I said, I'm fairly high volume, and so I pay $99 a month for my TradeStation platform. But I also get a penny a share transaction. So it's very, very low. The other one I recommend if you're low volume is TradeKing. TradeKing, you're going to pay $5. I think it's $4.95 for a commission on 100 shares. So that's still cheap. That's 5 cents a share. Investopedia. This is a great place to go and look up terms for terms about stocks and trading. If you need to know, like, what a call option is, we'll just go to Investopedia and look up call. Let me go here. So you just enter your term right here. And up here, these are sponsored links, so ignore these. And then right here, you'll see definitions for call option. And they usually have several different definitions. Very, very handy resource. CEF Connect, so that's for the closed-end mutual funds. And I recommended this is where you see if they're trading at a discount. Right here is an article about closed-end municipal bonds. This explains what the difference is between closed-end and open-end. I explained it a little bit, but this goes into more depth. It tells you why these are really great investment vehicles. Yahoo Finance is right here. That's where you can go and look up stocks, get current prices. And finally, the Coinflation Calculator is right here. Okay, so any other questions? Where do you take the high value coins? If you want to sell them, I haven't sold any yet, but you can sell them off Craigslist or eBay. Like I said, I'm just holding them just as a chaos fund. Just if all hell breaks loose, then in theory, the price of silver or gold will skyrocket. The Retirement Millionaire, is that the one that Dr. Ifrig publishes? Yes, that's it. Dr. Ifrig is the publisher for Retirement Millionaire. Okay, and I know this was a lot of information in this session here. So if you have any questions, just ask them. Let this kind of gel in your mind. Go out and practice. Go out to Yahoo and look up some stocks and just take a look at the options and see if you can figure it out on your own. Is there a good reference book for what you're showing us? I tell you the best reference that I can give you would be the Retirement Millionaire because they have – once you sign up, you get all the past newsletters, plus you get access to their model portfolio. They have videos and stuff that show you, how to do different option trading. Also, YouTube is great. for showing you different options trades. So you can go to YouTube and just search for call option, examples of call options, example of put options. Okay, totally off the subject question, but this is fine. When you do ClickBank account squatting, do you have to have a new account for each found nickname? Yes. Yeah, that's, you have to have a new account for each nickname, because each nickname is a new account. And we talked about that in the ClickBank session of RIM, which was about maybe 3 weeks ago. Okay, anything else? Any other questions about investing? What happens if, what do you do if you have no money? Nobody actually asked that question, but I want to throw it out there, because I think it's a good question. It's a good, something we should talk about. What if you have no money? How do you invest then? Well, you start small, and the reason you probably have no money is probably because you have too many expenses. And so you need to start cutting your expenses. And I talked about that in, I believe in the first session, I went through some of the ways to do that. But if you have if you're paying out a lot in credit cards, just different things that you purchased and you're paying on accounts, the best thing to do is to pay off the smallest one first. So let's say you're paying $100 a month for a credit card bill, like a department store bill. And it's $500. Well, you want to get that one paid off first, so then you can take that $100 that you're paying per month or whatever it is, $50 or whatever it is, and use that $50 to pay the next highest bill. And that's called the snowball effect for paying off your bills. And that's what Dave Ramsey recommends. I'm a big follower of Dave Ramsey. And he says that you should pay off your lowest ones first, and then use that money to pay off the next lowest one. And then you just keep going like that. That way, you're chipping away at it a little bit at a time, but you're also freeing up more money to pay off the next one. So it's really a snowball effect. And then the next thing is increasing your income. And you can do that by using some of the techniques I talked about in the very first session. If you're not doing Amazon FBA, you need to start doing that. It's a great way of earning some extra income. Okay, any other questions? Gary says, my wife and I are accumulating things for FBA. That's great, Gary. Excellent. Be sure and review the sessions that I went over when I listed my items, just so you'll get a few tips in there. I was just at Goodwill the other day and found all kinds of stuff. It was my usual Monday morning. I hadn't been there in a couple of weeks because my wife's surgery. So I went in, and it was like nobody else goes in there and looks for this stuff. I got a whole basket full. I mean, a whole cart full. DVDs, puzzles and games. Let's see, I found some, I can't even remember what all I found. It was a bunch of stuff. Audiobook. Gary, you're in Austin. That's interesting, because I was in Austin last summer And we were staying at this, we rented a house. And in the neighborhood we were at, there was a thrift shop right there, a Goodwill. So I went to the Goodwill there and I found some stuff that I ended up bringing back with me when I came back home. Does the squatter method work with other affiliate sites like JV's? No. It only works with ClickBank. That's the only one I know that it works with, just because of the way that their accounts are set up. Karen says she's getting back on track sourcing. It's been too damn cold. I know that, Karen. A clerk at Goodwill said they are selling stuff on eBay. Yeah, but you know what, Gary? You know what they're selling on eBay? They're selling the stuff that they know is worth something. You know, they're selling the collectible stuff. I would almost guarantee you that they're overlooking the stuff like the puzzles and games and the DVDs, you know, things like that. Those are the things that I really look for. Now, I do find collectible stuff, too. This is Monday when I went in. I found, this is great. I found Falsograph. Anybody know what Falsograph is? It's plates. It's and you would recognize them when you see them because they have such a pretty finish to them. And they're very popular. And I found three mugs and three cereal bowls. So what obviously happened was, everyone who had them probably had four of each, and they probably had one of their mugs was broken, and one of their cereal bowls was broken, and so they got all new patterns, and they just donated it to Goodwill. Well, I'm going to list those, and they're listed on Amazon and eBay, but I'll probably end up listing them on eBay. And I'll just list one at a time. I'll probably have an auction with one of the mugs listed on the page, but there'll be three, or I'll just repeat that after it sells, because I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who have broken one of their mugs and they're looking for another one. And the mugs were selling for like 10 bucks each. I paid 49 cents. I paid 49 cents for the mugs and for the bowls. Let's see. Any other questions? Do you mind saying how many hours a day, on average, you devote to your businesses? You know, it's hard to say because I'm pretty much, if I'm not doing something with one of the businesses, I'm thinking about it. I'm always, you know, if I'm out driving around and I see a thrift shop, then I'll just stop just to check it out. So I just consider this fun. How about piecemealing a set of Anisole china versus selling a complete set of 12? Sorry, my mouse is in the way. 12 never used. Look on eBay and see what other people are doing. You could probably make more money by piecemealing it, but it could also be a big pain to do that. Yeah, I would look on eBay just to see what other people are doing, and you can see other people that are piecemealing it, how much they're getting for it. But generally about the hours I spend on my business. You know, I have staff of people that do stuff too, but they're pretty much developers and they're doing stuff for future projects and future products. I usually get up in the morning and first thing I do is start working on emails that I'm going to send out for that day. So I'll spend an hour to sometimes 2 hours just working on different emails, because I have several different email lists. And so that's the, that's probably the biggest work, the most work I do in a day. And then generally about once a week, usually on Monday, I will plan the rest of my week. And so I know on Monday, I know what we're going to promote or what I'm going to promote on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so I've already got all those promotions planned out. And then on Tuesday, I go into the office and I meet with my staff and we just kind of plan out, you know, what they're going to be doing. And I look at the stuff they've done, answer any questions they have. And usually I spend about half a day in the office on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, I have a Wednesday webinar every night, every Wednesday night. I haven't had one for the last 2 weeks, but that's just because I've been busy with my wife's surgery. We will definitely have one next week, and we might have one this Saturday. I'm trying to work on one. I'm working on one right now. But Wednesday, I kind of get prepared for the webinar, so I spend, sometimes 2, 3, 4 hours just preparing for that. And the rest of the week, it's mostly just preparing emails. I tend to work 7 days a week just because I want to. So then the rest of the time I spend just doing fun stuff like, going out to the thrift shops, finding stuff, listing stuff on Amazon, doing some, right now we're doing a lot of Facebook stuff with Facebook fan pages. I think I showed you one of the fan pages we're building up, the Happy Happy Dog Dog fan page. Working on Amazon stuff, not just FBA, but my own line of supplements. So I have plenty of stuff to do, but it's all fun stuff. Okay, if there's nothing else, I'm going to close it out, and this recording will be available in a couple of days. If not tomorrow, then the next day. And be sure to ask any questions that you have for next week or for the next session. Next session will be, let's see. We're not going to have a session every week now because we're into the Q&A. So basically, we're going to have a session once a month. So let's do the next session. Today is the 23rd. Let's do it in 2 weeks. So 23rd, next week is the 30th. So Thursday the 6th of February will be the next one. So be sure and load me up with questions. I didn't have any questions from the last time till this time, so be sure and ask any question you want about anything internet marketing related. Okay? All right, great. Thanks for coming, and I'll see you next time. Have a great week.